Action.
This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought by you, our listeners. Actually, SQPN, the big broadcasting or podcasting organization that we form and that provides you with shows like this one, are totally dependent on our listeners to pay the bills for our bandwidth and our hosting costs and everything. So if you want to help out, if you appreciate what you've been listening to over, well, I can say the years now because this is our second year, and you want us to continue, and if you are able to help us out, then we would welcome that tremendously. You can go over to sqpn.com/donate for more information. Thanks in advance for all your support.
A boy. A young boy will lead you to him. But beware, Rumpelstiltskin, for that boy is more than he appears. He will lead you to what you seek. But there will be a price. The boy will be your undoing.
Then I'll just have to kill him.
Welcome back to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Today we're going to talk about the 14th episode of Season 2 with Deborah, Lisa, Inge, and Shelley. Welcome to the show. We're a bit late with this episode. Some of you have written us or emailed us or wrote messages on Facebook or Twitter. It's like, where is the episode? Well, it was all my fault. I was out of town. I left Storybrooke to go to the Vatican because Pope Benedict XVI stepped down and we are currently waiting for a new pope. And I had to be there to report on the spot. And that is why we couldn't record an episode sooner. But, well, we're making it up to you. And we're going to talk about, well, everything that was revealed to us about Bill Fyre, about his father, about Henry's grandfather, who happens to be the same one as Bale Fyre's father, and Bill Fyre being the well, what is it? I'm getting confused. It's so confusing. Help us out here. So my first question to you is, we've seen this older Bill Fyre before, right? But I totally forgot in which situation. I remember that at one point he was talking to Pinocchio, right? And he was looking at what was in that magic box, and this was in season one, and we didn't get to see
it. No, it's not season one.
Season two.
We've seen him
season
twice.
Two already.
The beginning, okay. The first episode of season two, we were introduced to Neil.
Yes.
And he was just the first couple minutes of the episode.
Right. We saw that apartment.
You saw him
apartment.
In New York, and you're like, who the heck is that? And then he got the postcard saying broken. And we all speculated then, because of the stuff on the wall, that he was Peter Pan.
Right. Which was totally wrong.
Oh, it's not?
I don't know.
No? Okay. Oh, wait a minute. I know what you're talking. I'm starting to... I didn't see that. Thank you. All right, we'll get to that. So, we've seen him before. But when was that scene where he talks with Pinocchio and gets to see what's in the box?
That's in Tallahassee.
That's Emma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because we discovered that he was Henry's father and that he was Emma's true love. And at the end of that episode, we find out why he left her in jail. And it's because August showed him something in the box and he took off.
Yes.
And we all and now we know what it could be.
It was the beanstalk climbing episodes where we got all kind of flashbacks with Emma. Emma was with Hook. And Hook tried to mesmerize Emma, and we got to learned about her through love.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it also appeared.
It's probably my fault. I've been watching so much TV, and then the whole Pope thing, and so I start to forget things. And but
well,
I might not
a lot
be
at us this season.
I might not be the only person that struggles with, you know, just the multitude of people that we're introduced to and the things that we need to remember. I noticed in some news reports on Once Upon a Time that the ratings are actually dropping, which is strange for the real fans because these episodes are so good. But I wonder if the ratings are dropping because people get so confused. And we've seen this before in series like Lost, where at one point people are like, so who was that guy and why is he related and in which time zone are we? And it gets a little bit too confusing and they don't help you. At least that's my opinion, my personal opinion. They don't help you.
I don't think so. Oh, go Deborah. Ahead.
No, here in the U.S., I know both of you and father are, you know, across the ocean, so you don't get to see the competition that's on Sunday night now.
Okay.
Sunday night here in the U.S., you have The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Which is very, very popular in the U.S.
Yes.
And I think is Downton Abbey. Yep.
Downton Abbey was opposite.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then you also have one of my favorite shows is also opposite, which is The Amazing Race on CBS, just started a couple weeks ago. So you have four really great shows all at the same time.
Wow, that is fierce competition. I didn't realize that at all. I thought it was just due to the confusing aspects of Once Upon a Time.
I thought also that we have some hiatuses. So we had the Emmys, I think, or what was it?
Mm-hmm. Oscars.
Oscars, yep. Golden Globe. So we had kind of breaks. So if people miss a couple of episodes, then they are completely lost. Because if you miss an episode in this series... It will be very confusing when you pick up three episodes later, because then so much has happened.
Yeah.
So I also think that has to do with it, because not everybody goes back on and watch it online, because it takes too much time to keep up to date.
And do the ratings count when people record it on a DVR and play it back a later time? Because that's what I do. I record all of them. I don't watch anything live anymore.
I don't think like Netflix and all the queued and recorded episodes are counted in the ratings.
No, I think they've got some way to monitor the DVR now. But Nielsen just announced they're going to start counting. I think Amazon Prime and Hulu they're in talks to include all that, but for now they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if there is some loss in people watching it, it's because. Okay, first season, I gotta say, what kept me hooked and wanting more is the intrigue of knowing who is everybody. You know,
So
the speculation, there was more speculation in season one. With season two, not very much speculation anymore. It's all like, oh, well, here's Joanna, and you know immediately who that person is. I'm sorry, I'm flashing forward here. Or, you know, or here's this character, and you know immediately who that character is. And there's no more suspense as far as, you know, speculation who that could be.
No, but Manhattan was a big reveal show for us, and it was a big confirmation of a lot of the speculation we've had all season and into season one. And it sets it up for what we've talked about before, which is Gold's motivation. What motivates Gold? And here, I mean, okay, he's found his son. Now what? And I think they set it up quite well.
I think it was a nice payoff for fans that we've been kind of like we've been waiting and we've been talking and been waiting, and they didn't let us down. They gave us a lot of content right in the beginning.
They gave it to us right in the beginning. I mean, there was no, you know, let's chase Bay around for a long time. It was, hey, here's his door. Hey, you know, hey, finding people's my thing, you know. Knowing people who don't want to be found, that's my thing. Boom! And off they take. And I mean, it's in the first, 5 minutes? 2 minutes? That, boom, it's Neil. And Emma looks up, that look on her face, and...
It's you! Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody was born in Storybrooke except Henry.
It is quite cool to get that relational aspect deepened in the series, because we've always felt that this story is ultimately... about the relationships between all these people, the parents' issues that they have, and we get to a whole different new level, I think, in all these relationships, because it turns out that Gold can tell Henry, "I am your grandfather," and who would have thought that? I didn't see that coming, and it will complicate in the next episode even more. But I love the way that this story is evolving right now.
And they introduced a whole new theme in this episode too: predestination. How much of our lives can be changed and controlled? How much can we change and control, or is it all predestined?
What does it mean to know the future? Yes, let's talk about that new character that we get introduced to, which is one of the scariest ones I've seen so far in this second season. Almost looks like something from a movie by Guillermo del Toro. It's this witch that has her eyes torn out, and then instead the eyes are in her hands. What did you think of that new character?
We've actually seen her before. She was in either the pilot or the second episode, whenever Regina enacts the curse.
Wow, I totally forgot about that.
Didn't get that
either. That's very cool.
The blind witch.
I'm getting old, but she
I think they referred to her as a blind witch, or she was there as a blind witch. But here they call her a seer. But she's a young girl. She's a child.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then later, when he comes back to see her as the Dark One, she's a young woman, we'll say, not too old. And then she's an old woman when the curse is enacted.
It's funny. I didn't remember that. I do have to say that the visual was... It was very striking. I liked it. My 6-year-old, however, didn't like it at all.
Oh, really?
My kids were kind of creeped out with the eyes and the hands.
It was creepy because it was so realistic.
Was a little
much. And then the head too, with all those scars. I mean, it just looked very gruesome. Something almost out of a horror movie.
Yeah, I loved seeing that because it was like, oh, it's there, the archetypical seer who is blind. Mm-hmm. You know, so because. Yeah. In you have this seer in the Odyssey by Homer.
Yeah, Homer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's blind too.
Okay, well the big theme that is introduced, of course, is if you know the future, is that actually a benefit to you or is it a curse? And again, as we've seen so often in this series, something that looks like it could be an advantage or it could be grace actually turns out to be a terrible burden and almost a punishment. And in this case, the witch is actually trying to get rid of her gift. It is not something that she aspires to. Quite on the contrary, it might have landed her in the situation that she is in, like imprisoned. And the interesting aspect, of course, is that we don't get a definitive answer to this question. So what does it mean? Is there really predestination in the universe or not? The witch talks about, well, the future is a puzzle. And what you see is part what could happen and what will happen. So it's a mixture and you have to figure out what is what. So it's not as obvious as it seems. And it can be very confusing at first, and it is very confusing for Mr. Gold, for Rumpelstiltskin, because he's like, well, I know certain things, but I know also other things that might not happen. So ultimately, do you really know the future or not?
Mm-mm. Do you realize this is the second time that he's been, I'd say, taken in by someone looking to get rid of their power or their gift?
Just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, the Dark One tricked him into taking it away because it was a horrible thing. And then now this seer, you know, thought it was a curse also, and she got him to take it away from her. So, you know, twice now he's taken something that he thought he wanted that maybe not so much.
Yeah.
You know, not working out so great for him.
Well, and then there is, of course, the ultimate price that is revealed for knowing the future. And we get that very eerie prophecy about the reunion with Balefire. It will happen. That's the one thing she gives him. But it will have a terrible price. The boy that will lead you to your son will be your undoing. I immediately was like, wow, this sounds so much like Voldemort and the prophecy about, you know, the one boy that will be his undoing. And so Voldemort, from that moment on, ever since he's heard about that prophecy, is keen on killing Harry Potter. And this is very similar. So now
one,
we know that gold...
One difference there.
What's the difference?
And that, the choice of words. She used the word undoing.
Oh, interesting.
She didn't use ruin. She didn't use destruction. She didn't use death or you know, downfall. It was undoing. And undoing can be unfastening, loosening, reversal.
Good
point. Of the curse.
Good
of his
an annulment.
His curse.
It can be an undoing of him being the Dark One and a return, a redemption.
That's a great point because she keeps insisting that the future is always different from what you expect. So now we're being led to believe that, or at least we see that Rumpel thinks that Henry is, you know, needs to be killed because otherwise he's going to be killed. But it actually might mean that it might mean redemption.
Yeah, it happens also before in the first prophecy when she is saying that his actions on the battlefield will leave your child fatherless. And mm-hmm. he thinks he will die. Yeah. But that's not what the seer says.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's more like he's responding to the prophecy, making it and trying to change the future. And then what he does is actually reinforcing the future. So if he would have died, for example, his son would have been fatherless, but he would not have been the son of a coward.
He's fulfilling the prophecy by trying to avoid it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. But she tells him, knowing would not have made a difference, you still would have been powerless to escape your fate. So that makes me believe he wouldn't have died on the battlefield. He would have, again, been a coward or acted cowardly or gone back. Maybe it would have been a self-action. But did you notice that he was the one thing he was afraid of, he's fulfilling? Mm-hmm. He was terrified of ending up like his father. And he says he's the son of a coward, and he was raised by spinsters. He wasn't even raised by his own parents. He was an orphan, so to speak. And so here's Bay repeating the exact same childhood. Raised by a son of a coward, an orphan. He lost his mother. He lost his father. You know, abandoned by both parents, actually, if you think about it, because Mila ran off with Hook. She wasn't coming back for Bay. She was like, okay. And now, you know, his father, too afraid to follow him, too afraid to try, too afraid to take that leap. Even if he hadn't been a coward on the battlefield, he proved himself a coward right then by not being willing to take the leap of faith with his son. And so his son was raised by who? Well, we don't know. And even in a future episode, we don't know. We don't have any answers yet for Bay. But he ended up fulfilling this prophecy.
Sounds like classic Greek tragedy in a way. It's mm-hmm. like no matter what you do, it will not end well. And that's yeah, the whole tension, of course, like that this whole longing for a happy ending. And it seems for so many people, it seems not to work out that way.
It made me think of Oedipus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it also, of course, Rumpel had the idea he didn't have a choice, and so he let the circumstances rule the outcome. So he had still a free will to choose how the future would happen, even if he would know what the future would be. Then you still have a choice to do good things or bad things, but he didn't do that.
I have to come to the defense of Rumpelstiltskin here, because I felt, you know, yes, he is not courageous enough to go into battle. He takes that hammer and causes him to be crippled. I mean, that was pretty gruesome, but I thought it was a great reveal, because I never really even asked myself why he was crippled. but I mean, he did it to be able with his son and his wife, and then he returns home, and then his wife is like, "Yeah, you are a coward. Yeah, I'm out of here." I was like, "Come on, can you be a little bit more compassionate with this man?" I mean,
there was a little disconnect between, "Oh, how loving we all are. We've, you know, we're I love you so much. Go be brave, fight honorably, and we'll have a family when you return." And,
right.
And then all of a sudden, you didn't die on the field like
you're
supposed to.
You should have died. Like, come on.
Maybe that's something in their culture. Some cultures, cowardice is then you hit the lowest of the low.
But still, this is not China. Come on.
Like, dude. No, it's not
Japan.
Could be.
It could have the same structural.
Yes, but I was like, this is so over the top. I mean, who would react like that? It's uncalled for, and I mean, no wonder that he is so frustrated. But I felt for him. I was like, come on, I probably have done the same.
Well, and you know, he became the Dark One before. If you think he became the Dark One to try and save Bay, everything he does was with the motivation of saving his son.
Yes.
And being with his son. So he branded himself a coward to be home with his son.
Yeah.
He became the Dark One to protect his son. And in that, he lost his son. So all of his choices have been for a good motive, a good ulterior motive, and they've all backfired on him. And so you can see where he might feel trapped. By destiny, by fate, that he cannot make a good choice, that his choices have no
tragic figure. You know,
does he really love his son? more than he loves his power at one point, because that's
not so much now.
I say, yeah, not anymore.
That's what Bea confronts him with. He was haunted by this image that he was in his pit, and his father opened his grip because he loved his magical power more than his son. And
right.
now he Rumpel say, "I'm sorry," but that for Bea, that's not good enough to just say sorry.
Well, and that's why when they say the boy will be your undoing, I really think it has to do with leaving behind all of this pain and tragedy and magic. It will be a reversal of becoming the Dark One. And I don't think that that's going to be a negative thing for Rumpel, but it's going to be a choice he has to make. And that will tie back into, again, this predestination. He has to go through all of this before he can release it and be reunited with Bea. And I mean reunited as in they're both engaged in a happy, loving relationship. But and I see this, not to talk about the next episode, but I see this as a foreshadowing of something that's going to have to come. Rumpel is going to have to choose. He just is. And whether he chooses power and magic over the love and family, that's going to be his ultimate. And that could be the end of the show and the end of the series. I don't know. But I do see that coming.
Let's listen to a sound clip of what happens meanwhile. Because, of course, we haven't talked about the other main characters that are scheming and planning. And here they are.
I'll go after him alone.
Even if you could find him, do you really think you can just walk up to him and stab him in the heart with your sword?
Well, I prefer my hook, but I can't find that now.
You're not going anywhere.
I deserve my vengeance.
You're right, you do. And with the Dark One gone, we can search for the one magical item that can actually kill him here. His dagger.
Cora, Regina, and Hook on a quest to find the dagger. Shelley.
I thought this was more of a side story, almost buried into the greater story, which was Neil and Bea and Rumpel and Emma. This one, now, and without discussing the next episode, I think this was just a little bit of a seed to get us hooked, so to speak,
yes,
into what's coming in the next episode.
Absolutely. But I was glad that it was part of the story, because it helps us kind of connect the episodes together. What struck me is that we also get to see more of that relationship between Cora and Regina intensifying, and it seems to me that Regina is totally under Cora's spell. And it almost starts to become very creepy, because I don't know if it was me, but Cora and Regina almost start to look like each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Botox or magic, but Cora almost looks like she has the same age as Regina. What's going on there?
Well, I don't want to say Botox, but okay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm assuming they're doing it on purpose to see that they're coming together, that they're doing their makeup and making them look. And also they let Cora's hair down, which really changed her look.
Yes.
You know, from that tight updo that she had with the big dress, they put her in casual modern clothes with her hair down, you know,
and she's shorter.
Yeah, without
she's
the hair.
Shorter than Regina without right. And when they stand next to each other, I was like, man, I didn't know Barbara Hershey was that small of a woman.
But she is
or Lana Priya is very tall. That could be also.
That's true.
She that's could true. Be
she's mm-hmm. just as dangerous no matter how small she is, because she has a master plan and you can feel it. She's after that dagger, and what does she want with it? And Hook seems to be the least interesting character in a way. He just keeps going on like, I just want my vengeance. I just want my vengeance.
Right.
I mean, it's like, yeah, come on.
He
get
seems
over
very
it.
One note, not developed in that way.
I guess it's the pirate.
But there's too much else going
thing.
On.
Yeah.
Well, I forget how much we had in this. I mean, I focus so much on Neil and Emma and Gold and Henry, because to me that's where all of the interest was in this episode. But they had all these side stories, you know, with Belle in the hospital, and I mean that new guy that drove the car.
Yes.
I mean, they have all these other things going on, which.
Oh, yeah, like Regina would just magically levitate all the items out of Belle's purse, and Belle would just happen to be carrying around the catalog card with a number on it, and that Greg Mandel standing behind Regina taking the picture on his cell phone.
Yes.
That's going to come into play. I mean, obviously, they're setting something up for either late season two or for season three.
Let's talk about a little bit about what they're inferring here. So, because of course we were wondering, who is this guy? And is he from Fairy Tale Land or not? It seems to me that his role is more to reveal the magic to the outside world and potentially thereby endangering Storybrooke's, let's say, confines. And if the world sees this, if he posts this on YouTube, that's going to be the end of Storybrooke. It's going to turn into Disney World.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think, Deborah?
Well, no, I really think that Greg Mendel and whoever he's talking to, I think they're Storybrooke characters. I think they belong there.
Okay.
I really think, just like Pinocchio and Emma and Bay and everybody else who's escaped, they're finding their way back to Storybrooke.
Interesting.
It's like the broken curse has a kind of home-pulling effect, something
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So it could be that he is going to be the one who is going to bring in a lot of new characters that we haven't met yet into Storybrooke. That might be a great way to set it up for season three.
Maybe he's a lost boy.
Ooh.
From Peter Pan.
Mm, could be.
Yeah, that I have a theory about lost boys when seeing this episode, because maybe we should move to the conversation between Emma and Bay and the pup
okay.
for that.
Let me play that sound clip and then we'll get to your theory.
Last meeting was a coincidence, because how the hell did that happen if it wasn't in your plan or your father's?
Think about it. He wanted you to break the curse. Us meeting, that could have stopped it. Maybe it was fate.
You believe in that?
Everything that happens, happens by design, and there's nothing we can do about it. Forces greater than us conspire to make it happen. Fate, destiny, whatever you want to call it, the point is, maybe we met for a reason.
Okay, what about your theory, Inge?
So he mentions August and his box. So and it's revealed that the typewriter in that box has a piece of paper with "I know you are Balefire" written on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if Balefire already escaped Fairytale Land in a very long time ago, so August couldn't have possibly known Balefire because of the age difference. So the only explanation for August or Pinocchio to know that Neil is Balefire is that he knows him from somewhere else, and it has to be Neverland. And so my suspicion is that both August and Neil were lost boys. And there's also maybe a merge with the story where Pinocchio went off to an island where the boys started growing donkey ears.
And Pleasure Island.
Pleasure Island, yeah. So my bet is that August has seen Balefire in Neverland.
And they would tie in the Pinocchio story with the Lost Boys and the Neverland.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me.
I'm still convinced that Balefire is Peter Pan.
Let's talk about that theory because I'm getting more.
I can't really buy into the August, because when would he have been able to go to Neverland? He's a boy. He's with Pinocchio. Pinocchio sends him through the tree instead of letting Mary, Margaret, or David go with her. And he's supposed to watch Emma. And as far as we know, he grew up in the U.S. in present day, the same as Emma.
But he says
there's no place for the overlap. Bay has traveled to many, many, many lands. That's next episode. But August, as far as we know, August has only traveled all around the world. We have nothing to believe that August has been able to travel magically outside of present day.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is maybe it has something to do with he has been a keeper of stories, because there's a lot we don't know about August. How does he know? Again, he was a boy when he came through the portal. So how does he know all the stories to put in the book?
Yeah,
you know, because he allegedly wrote the book and is adding stories to it. So how did he know them all if he wasn't there? So
it's going to be a great reveal someday.
We don't know all of that.
I think there's going to be a return of Pinocchio at one point. I mean, he's been missing.
It's going to be in this season.
I hope so. I think they need to.
Two or three episodes from now.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to
that. I do know
that.
That's not a spoiler. I do know that.
We need answers.
I have to say that one of my favorite things was when Emma called home. You were talking about weird family tree. Mm-hmm. Oh, wasn't it that someone said, I'd hate to be at that Thanksgiving. You know, like, that'll make things interesting.
David said that.
It was because David trying to figure out about the grandfather thing.
Yeah, they were like, so Mary Margaret is the grandmother. That makes Regina the evil stepmother, but also the adoptive mother. But then
she says, no, it's his step-grandmother.
Yeah, and then Gold is his grandfather, and they were just like, oh.
It's a good thing we don't have Thanksgiving in our land, because that dinner would suck.
We were all thinking it. You know, we're all thinking, now, wait a minute. What is that? What? You know,
and that's the only time we see them.
And I thought that was a really kind of funny moment. I'm glad they put that in there.
Yes. And of course, we start to really see all the connections in the past, and then there is that matter of the future.
Seeing the inevitable can be a terrible price.
But you wouldn't have to worry about stuff. You just know.
But that's the great trap. The future is like a puzzle with missing pieces. Difficult to read, and never, never what you think.
Never what you think. That seems to be the most important element to remember. And of course, there's this question, how much freedom is there really if someone knows how it's all going to end up? Does that leave enough room for personal freedom and for the choices that people make, or is there just a predetermined fate? It's, of course, that's a huge religious discussion as well, a theological discussion that separates like Catholics from Protestants and Protestants internally as well. You know, how much freedom do we truly have? And here, story wise, I think they just leave it open by introducing that confusion. Like, you never really, really know the future. Because you might know certain things, but it might be your interpretation can be wrong, and so that still leaves some space for the story to be interesting. Otherwise, you know, Rumpel could just tell us everybody, this is what's going to happen on that and that date, and so let's just all sit here and wait for it to happen. But that wouldn't make for a very interesting story. But of course, the question is, can the future be changed? That is something that we discussed also, I think, in the first season. Is like, is the future in motion, like Yoda would say, or is it really predetermined, and is there nothing that you can do about it?
Yeah, because a lot of the first season was about choices and making choices and what path that led you toward. And now this episode, we just see where Rumpel is so firmly stuck in destiny. I mean, even Bay told Emma, you know, he used to tell me there are no consequences or coincidences. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that happens, happens by design. And there's nothing we can do about it. It's a force greater than us. And that's what made me think of the whole predestination, the difference between the two major Christian mm-hmm. faiths.
Yeah. Just in a nutshell, it's basically, if God knows the future and he already knows what you're going to do, then you're not really free. And it's ultimately God that will decide whether, you know, you will be saved or you go straight to hell. And in some extreme Protestant circles, that is almost becomes a burden to live under, because no matter what you do, even if you try to be a good person, you can still go to hell if it's predetermined. Whereas I think in some denominations, there's like, well, you cannot avoid being sent to hell if that is what God has predestined you for. But you can still mess it up if you were predestined to go to heaven or something like that. It's terrible. Whereas Catholics, they have a slightly more optimistic view of things. It's like, yes, our choices do matter, and what we do and how we act is very important for the ultimate outcome of our eternal life. I mean, why would we have this freedom of choice? Why would we perceive our freedom to be there if ultimately it's all, you know, it's all for nothing? I think it would make our human existence totally without sense and without meaning. And that's why I keep believing in freedom of choice. And ultimately, it's also the only thing that can really give allow people to love each other. If there's no true freedom, and if everything is pre-programmed and predestined, can you really speak of love in that case? Isn't love all about choosing for someone? I think it is. That's just my two cents in this whole theological discussion.
Well, talking about choosing someone, I want to go back and talk more about Emma and Neil, because that to me was the biggest emotional payoff this episode, mm-hmm. them reuniting and having all the questions. And I loved Emma's reaction when she saw him. You know, she immediately went to, "You played me."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
"Did you know who I was mm-hmm. 10 years ago, 11 years ago?"
Which
and,
would
and
feel
he
like
didn't
total,
answer her.
That would feel like total betrayal if this all was a setup, and basically, she wasn't loved at that time, and Henry wasn't born out of love. Ugh, that's terrible to discover that.
Yeah, but right. we and don't, she grew up without a family.
Out, well, and then to find out that Gold didn't know, because mm-hmm. we're all sitting here thinking that Gold planned this.
Yes.
You know, in some way that he's master
Emma
manipulating.
Emma was convinced of that too, because that's yeah. why she's so mad, because he now thinks he's a pawn played by Gold and his son.
Yeah. But okay, but this, it goes back to that one episode where it was just a fleeting conversation between Regina and Gold about how Gold kind of brokered the baby, Henry, mm-hmm. to
Thank
Regina.
You. Thank you. That's in my notes, that mm-hmm. nobody has mentioned the fact that Rumpel is the one that brought Henry to Storybrooke for Regina to adopt. How did he arrange for an adoption in Arizona if technically they couldn't leave Storybrooke and they didn't know who they were?
Mm-hmm.
Arizona to Maine is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but I have the suspicion that both Regina and Gold knew exactly who they were, and they remembered everything the whole time.
Yeah, I used to think that Gold did, but I was under the impression that Gold didn't start to remember exactly who he was until Emma showed up, and that's when it all clicked for
that's
him.
What
it was
the
like
writers,
an awakening.
Didn't the writers say that?
I think so.
So can't maybe remember. That's one of those
oops
inconsistency. Yeah, maybe it's an oops they did in the beginning and then realize, oh,
could
can't
be.
Explain that. I don't know. Maybe well, they'll maybe know. That'll be developed. But
yeah.
I did love the turmoil over. She didn't want to tell him about Henry. She didn't want to admit that
yeah.
she was in love with him, that she did miss him. That I mean, it's like she just didn't want to open herself back up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming, you knew it was coming. I mean, you know, and then coming back up into the apartment. And first of all, Henry never calls her mom. He calls her Emma. So for him to come out of the bathroom and say mom,
mm-hmm.
you
yes.
know, for that, because he always calls her Emma.
I found it too.
And Gold freaked out when Emma said Neil.
Yeah.
And
you know
okay,
each
my daughter,
other.
my 10-year-old, her favorite moment of this whole episode was when Emma comes back and tells Gold, the guy's a ghost, you know, he's not here, and he's all upset with her. I'm going to make you tell me. No one breaks a deal with me. And Neil comes busting in the door.
Yes.
He's obviously
yeah.
been keeping an eye on them, keeping an eye on Emma. And he comes to the rescue. And my daughter was like, woohoo, jumping up on the couch. I mean, she just thought that was the best thing. But when he said, I came back, I've seen what you do to people who break deals. I mean,
yeah.
He snapped his finger and turned that guy into what, a mouse or a cockroach or something and
mm-hmm.
stepped on him that one time
yeah.
in front of Bay. So yeah, I'd forgotten that he always calls her Emma. So the mom had to be the setup.
It's a setup to, well, of course, the later disappointment that he has yeah. never been told the truth. And then he says something terrible. It's like, you're just like her, like
Gina.
Regina.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
never
yeah.
told me the truth. And then he, after that, that must be the most horrible thing for Emma to hear.
That
and
is
then,
such a kid thing, though, isn't it? Just to
it
go
is,
off the deep end. You know, she kills people and evil curses and spells and all this stuff. And you lied to me about who
Once.
My father was. So you're just the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a kid thing.
Not really.
Did you not love the way she answered the question? She didn't look at Gold. She didn't look at Bay. She didn't look at Neil. She didn't look at anybody else. She held Henry's face in her hands.
Mm-hmm.
She, like, cupped her hands around his face. She looked into his eyes.
Yeah.
And she very gently said, yes.
Yeah, that was touching.
She answered Henry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did really good with that. I just emotionally, after all these episodes that I've been kind of like, eh, you know, yeah, it's okay. And then this one kind of brought it all home and gave us the payoff. And it set it up for so much more.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you have Cora and Regina looking for the dagger, we realize Gold is powerless and mm-hmm. he can be killed. So, I mean, you've got all kinds of things that now are to come that are very, very exciting.
So should we be worried about Henry now? Because Gold said, and then I have to kill him.
I think we should be.
Yeah.
I think we should be.
Well, and I don't know, and I apologize. I can't remember now. I think it's the next episode. So I'm going to say it, though. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of talk about who has Henry at their best interests.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So the focus, the shift is now moving to Henry.
Well, and it's there is always someone else who hardly was in this episode, but who could still be important in, you know, whatever threat might menace Henry. And that is, of course, his grandfather, Prince Charming. Mm-hmm. He might play a role in all this. Let's listen to a short conversation here.
So Rumpelstiltskin is Henry's grandfather?
Apparently.
But I'm his grandfather.
You can have more than one.
That was funny.
So his step-grandmother is Regina, the evil queen.
Actually, his step-great-grandmother. And she's also his adoptive mother.
I think they don't have Thanksgiving in our land because that dinner would suck.
Or maybe this will mellow everyone out.
I'm so grateful for Prince Charming here because he totally, you know, embodies my reaction to some of these episodes. Like, wait, now what? Who? When?
But there's
Where?
Snow and all her good-heartedness coming through. Maybe this will mellow everyone out. Maybe child shall reunite us all and we'll be a big happy family with just normal little squabbles.
It's her desire for a happy ending. And it's naive, but at the same time, that's her role, at least for
it's
now.
It's kind of refreshing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have somebody who believes in the good and believes it's possible. And I have to say, in kind of our cynical world where we all expect,
yes,
you know, things to go wrong or to happen or this or that, and believe in perfection.
That is
to sit there and believe in the good and the positive and the hope.
It has been her motto since the very first episode of this series, since the pilot. She has that wonderful quote where, and I had a jingle of that in the first season that we used quite a bit. She explains that stories are necessary because they give us hope. They help us to make sense of this world, and they prevent us from becoming cynical. And Snow, until now, has always been the embodiment of that hope, which, according to the writers, is the most important theme of what they try to tell in this story. There's always hope. And so, well, next episode, I won't spoil it yet. Something is going to happen that will change that in Snow. But before we get to that, let's play another sound clip here.
You're so worried about you know what I've dealt with? Every night for more years than you could know. The last thing I see before sleep is the image of you. You and me. Over that pit. Your hand wrapped around mine. And then you open your grip. And as I fall away, all I can see is your face. Choosing all this crap over me. Letting me go. Now it's my turn. Now I'm letting you go.
Sorry.
I don't care. I didn't get closure, so you don't either. Gotta go.
That must have hurt so much. I don't get closure.
Time's up.
And you won't get closure. Mm-hmm. And you see how powerless Gold is here. And totally almost surprised that this happens. He had hoped for so much more. And now it's terrible. I mean, he's been looking forward to being reunited with his son for so many years. And now this happens? Ugh, terrible.
And the line right before that clip, he's trying to tell his son that he can be a good man again, that he's changed.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that as a good faith, to show him, he came here to this city without magic to find him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, his son then reminds him that you're still trying to use it, though, to make up for your mistakes.
Absolutely. I mean, and then that proposal that, you know, I can make this all go away. I can make you a 14-year-old again and erase the memories.
Did you cringe when he said that? I just cringed when he said that. I thought, really? You have learned nothing.
Oh, gosh. It's...
And he told him there's no greater pain than regret. And Bay's like, oh, yeah, try abandonment. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that they brought up, and I can't remember if we talked about this, is the fact that there's some lost time. And he says more years than you can imagine because there's a little hole of time in the timeline where, Bay was dropped down the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And he really hasn't aged that much since then.
True.
So they're suggesting that he went to a land where people don't age.
Let's talk about that in our next episode, because there will be more clues that might reveal us what actually is going on there with Balefire and Hook and that country where people don't age. But that wraps it up for this episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Go over to sqpn.com or to our subsite onceuponatime.sqpn.com for past and future episodes. We don't know all about the future, but a little bit. Stay tuned and see you next time here on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.